We tend to spend a lot of our time talking about Thomas, who I love. Thomas, I love Thomas. But we spend a lot of our time talking about Thomas, talking about sort of this day, this second day when he's with the disciples and Jesus shows up again as sort of the like, haha, he got it wrong moment of Thomas's story. And I think we miss the entire week before this. There are a couple of things we know about Thomas. Like I told the kids, this is really the only story we get about him. But even still, it tells us a couple of things. One, something kept him away last week. We don't know what that was, but he wasn't there. But he was around the disciples between sort of that first appearance and the second one. It wasn't a disengagement with his friends, with this community Jesus had shaped and formed for them, and that was continuing. And two, I think we can suppose that Thomas was very patient, because he just spent all week with his best friends talking about their dead teacher coming back and did not call them crazy, did not have them committed, or whatever the first century equivalent of that was, and did not leave. And I don't think we give Thomas enough credit for that. We know the truth here, and Thomas gets there too. Like, Thomas is not left out of this circle forever. But I think we discredit the amount of faith and love he had for his compatriots in not just abandoning them when they started sounding like the stress of this whole, like, crucifixion bit had gotten to them. Because that would have been a reasonable thing to do. Usually when your friends or loved ones, people who are dear to you, start persisting in unreliable stories, stories that are hard to prove, we accept sort of backing off and creating some distance in that relationship as a reasonable thing to do, because it is. But Thomas hangs in, maybe out of an understanding that they just went through some deep trauma, maybe out of a deep hope that they could be right. And he draws a not unreasonable line. We tend to give Thomas a lot of sort of guff for, like, well, then he asks for actual proof. But a lot of the stories of that first appearance of Jesus, the disciples get everything Thomas is asking for. They get to see, they get to touch. And Thomas isn't asking for something unreasonable. He's sort of saying, once we're the same, I'm willing to believe you. And it is for us to decide. And this might depend on the kind of day you're having and where you are in your faith journey, whether you think Thomas is saying that out of deep hope and need. Please let me believe. Please give me something so that I can believe. Or if he's saying that as like the, now you'll stop telling me about this. Okay, once I get that, then we can keep talking about this. That's a choice you get to make. But not only does he hold in through all of that, he shows up in the room with them. Whatever it is that causes them to gather together on this first day of the week, whether it's sort of the, like, we were here last week, we're here this week, we're going to keep coming back until we feel safe. Or if it's the last time when we were here, Jesus showed up, maybe he'll come back. The text is silent on why they're in that room. But it tells us that this week, Thomas shows up with them. And so does Jesus. And Jesus offers Thomas everything he offered the other disciples, right down to that reminder of peace. Peace be with you. You can see, you can touch, you can believe. Now there's an argument that at some level I like Thomas, because Thomas gets more than we get. most of us. There's a joy in being clergy in that I get to hear some of the stories of faith and faith experiences that most of us feel would get us potentially labeled a little out there, a little in need of mental health help. But I haven't ever heard stories of people actually having sort of a physical manifestation of Jesus Christ. Not like the disciples did that first time. Not like Thomas does when they're all there together. And as much as I take comfort in the gospel's words that blessed are those who have not seen but yet believe, man, it would be easier some weeks if I could see and touch too. Maybe that's just me. I suspect it's not. It would be easier. It would be nice to get what Thomas got. The good news is the church has done quite well over 2,000 years without a lot of physical manifestations of Jesus. That is not actually essential to our faith, it turns out. The words of the gospel are accurate. We can not see and yet believe and be blessed in our relationship with Jesus Christ. But it would still be kind of nice. The other reason I always like to consider that week between the first time Jesus showed up and the time when Jesus appeared to Thomas, is I think there's something in that conversation that the disciples and Thomas are having that feels really true to most of us. If you are brave enough and courageous enough, and let us be honest that it takes bravery and courage to talk about our faith with those around us, with those who do not go to church, to invite them to join us in this Jesus following adventure. I think we know exactly how that conversation between between the disciples and Thomas went. There's this great guy, Jesus. He was dead, he came back to life, and everyone's like, yeah, that's lovely. Let's talk about the weather. Hockey, you say. And there's a lot of the frustration that I think the disciples felt that is really true for a lot of us. I think that week gets repeated in some way, on and on throughout church history and throughout our lives. Right up to the point where, I mean, it's sort of changed, and most people aren't going to debate the back from the dead. There are some out there. I have met them. It's always fun. But it's gotten to the point where you sort of identify yourself as a Christian, and they're like, oh, you're one of those. The weather. But I also think there's a huge gift for us in this story. Jesus shows up with the disciples the first time and he says, as my Father sent me, I send you. And they go out and they do exactly what they think they're supposed to. They tell people. Not everyone at large. They're still a little scared, I think, of the crowds. But they tell the people they think it will help and that could join them, could believe with them. And it doesn't work. They spend that week, I think, caught between the hope of and the realized promise of seeing Jesus again, and the frustration at not being able to convince even Thomas, who saw the other miracles, who heard and received Jesus' teaching just as they had. But the disciples forgot something. It wasn't on them to actually convince Thomas. They did exactly what they were supposed to do. I would argue they did exactly what Jesus hopes they would do and we will do. They went out and they told someone And then they left it for Jesus. Unwillingly, I think, in their part. But they left it for Jesus, for God to convince Thomas. Our job isn't to convince people of what we believe in. It's to not be scared of sharing with people what we believe in. Our job is to remember that the faith and hope and relationship we have with God means God is just as interested in having a similar relationship with everyone around us. And we are not in this conversation, any of these conversations, alone. Sometimes I'll wind up talking with someone and they have a relationship that seems to be struggling for some reason. And they'll say, well, what do I do? They don't seem to want to talk to me. I say, you know, sometimes your job is just to sort of try and keep whatever connection you have open, open. Sometimes your job is for your own safety to not do that. But sometimes if the other person is struggling and you don't know why, keep reaching out, keep saying hi, keep doing something to be engaged. And I think that's really what God asks for us here too. Keep God in our conversations. Maybe not overly loudly, maybe not too insistently, depending on how you're hearing Thomas's reply of, when I can see and touch and believe, then we can keep talking about this. But keep prayer in your conversations. As much, if not more, for you than for those you would love to see join us at church. Because God is the one who will do the convincing. I love Thomas. I love his questions. On my best days, and they're sometimes a little rare, especially right now, I like to think that his reply to the disciples is full of hope and need. That he shows up before the God who loves us all and says, I need things to help me do this. And God, it turns around. This is going to seem weird, but hang on with me for a minute here. And in sort of a continuation of the conversation God has with Job, do you all know Job? It's a little out of left field. We did not read from Job this week. I love the book of Job, in part because it asks one of the great questions of, I think, all believers everywhere. Job has had a really fabulous life, and it has all completely fallen apart. We are not going to get into the details, and the book of Job is like 42 chapters long or something. And for the first 38 chapters of that, Job is having this conversation with people about whether or not he's the reason it fell apart. And he keeps insisting that he is a righteous person who has not sinned and therefore he could not have caused this, but he doesn't know what happened or why it happened. And after chapter 38, it's most of the book is this conversation, and it's very much, I think, a real representation of how we all handle great trauma and great sorrow. And after all of that, God finally shows up. And God does not explain God's self. But it is still a part of the Bible I repeatedly turn to when my life feels a little out of control and like I would appreciate God to fix it. So God gives this gorgeous speech. It's called The Speech from the Whirlwind, where God talks about how well the entire world is known. How God was there when the oceans were released into their beds. How God understands the mating rituals of weird animals off in the hills. I mean, they're weird to me. They probably weren't weird to Job. How God put the Pleiades and the other stars in the sky. God knows it all. What does Job think God doesn't know about Job's life? And I think here with Thomas, we get sort of an extension of that. Here is Jesus standing before Thomas with the scars of the crucifixion still on his body, saying, "You have been confused, you have felt betrayed and abandoned. You've entered into sorrow and pain and grief and loneliness, and I have been there too. I know the depth and the scope of all of those emotions too. There is no way you can possibly have been alone." And I think that, as much as any of the rest of it, is what Thomas responds to in coming to believe and being blessed by his belief. And I think that, at a core part, is part of what we are offered in this story too. Amen.